BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Her mum was always the loudest person in the room when I did meet her. And I think you just have to look on social media to see how influential she is.
This is Rosie, one of Paloma Shemarani's school friends. She's telling me about Paloma's mum's unconventional beliefs.
I met her mum a few times. I think subconsciously I sort of stayed away from it. I knew my views differed very dramatically from her mum's, and I think that was always a topic of discussion for me and Paloma.
Beliefs which she says were sometimes shared by Paloma.
I knew Paloma sided a bit more on the no vaccination side of things, and as soon as I was able to get a vaccination, I was straight in there to get one.
Rosie has type 1 diabetes, and her mum is a qualified nurse. Two reasons she says she grew up with a strong belief in conventional medicine. But generally, she and Paloma found ways around their differing views.
I think what I always appreciated about mine and Paloma's friendship, she never judged me or tried to convince me to change over my views in line with hers, and I never did the same for her.
But Rosie tells me it was a different story when it came to Paloma's mum.
I went to see her just as regulations were easing up for COVID, and I had my mask on my face because type 1 diabetic, I didn't want to catch COVID, and I left it out on the side in their house, and her mum came up and did a whole rant about how I shouldn't let them take away my freedom and all of that, and Paloma just sort of turned to me afterwards and said, "I'm really sorry, I should have told you to put it in your bag."
So after Paloma was diagnosed with cancer in 2023, Rosie was worried.
I just remember her telling me, and at the time, I think, I didn't quite believe it. I didn't know how bad it would be, so I remember the first thing I did was text my mum and ask my mum, well, what does this actually mean? And that's when my mum told me. I think that's when, like, the reality of it hit in place. And I had all the questions of, you know, will she get better? Will she be okay? And my mum was saying, obviously, with treatment, it's very treatable, especially in a young person.
Paloma told Rosie she had decided to do alternative therapies and to reject chemotherapy. Rosie was devastated, but she made a choice.
I decided to be a little bit more held back with my views on the treatment she was choosing because I didn't want to also be taken out of her life. I wanted to be there for her when she wasn't very well. So, and then obviously mentioning to my mum the method she chose and seeing the worry in my mum's face, I think that's when I sort of realised that it might not end up the way we want it to.
I'm Mariana Spring, the BBC's social media investigations correspondent, and I expose the real-world consequences of disinformation, conspiracy theories, trolls, and algorithms on social media. In this series, I'm investigating the case of a young woman called Paloma. She died of cancer, having rejected chemotherapy. While Paloma's case is extreme, her mum is a conspiracy theory influencer. Other patients are also experiencing medical misinformation in a range of ways. Like Paloma, some have a friend or relative who shares conspiracy theories. Others are being pushed content online. Because the social media world has given influencers a modern way to share anti-medicine ideas with real-world consequences. In this episode, I want to investigate what Paloma's case tells us about the spread of medical misinformation. This is Mariana in Conspiracy Land 2 for BBC Radio 4, Episode 3, Down the Cancer Conspiracy Rabbit Hole. Let's go back to the days leading up to Paloma's diagnosis. While waiting for test results from the hospital, Paloma texted her twin brother Gabriel. At this point, Paloma had been living independently, away from the family home and her mum, Kate Shemarani, after graduating. Paloma seemed to think bad news was coming. She told Gabriel, "I don't know, it's just crap that I felt like everything was finally going well for me. Like I got away from Kay, I finally got my freedom with a new flat, I got a job. I don't remember the last time I felt stressed about work, now I'm not at Cambridge." Like it was all on the up. While on holiday in Sweden with her boyfriend Anda, Paloma received a call from the hospital. They had her test results, but they wanted her to come in to discuss them face to face. Paloma and Anda flew straight back to the UK. It was the 22nd of December, just days before Christmas, and Paloma ended up in Maidstone Hospital with Arnda. There, she received a diagnosis of non-Hodgkin lymphoma. Doctors said, with chemotherapy, the prognosis was very good for this type of cancer in someone of Paloma's age. The advice from the doctors at Maidstone Hospital was to start treatment fairly quickly. Paloma let her mum, Kate, know the latest news. According to Arnda, Kate told Paloma she would come to the hospital. He says Paloma still wanted her mum's support, even though their relationship had fluctuated over the years, and it had recently been in a bad patch.
Paloma hadn't seen Kate for a long time and was terrified of seeing her.
He told me Paloma spoke to the nurses in the hospital about her worries.
She had been open with them that the relationship was not good. She didn't feel safe at home.
When Kate arrived at the hospital, Arnda was concerned about her behaviour.
Kay rocked up. My mum was there as well, and she was... My mum had never met Kate, but she was just disgusted by the way that Kate was talking to these people, you know.
I'm aware that doctors and nurses discuss safeguarding concerns about Paloma among themselves. Medical staff continued to talk to Paloma about recommended treatment, but Arnda says Kate was critical of their approach and that she wanted Paloma to consider alternative methods.
Kate has this book of tricks, these tactics to like undermine everything. So she gave Paloma these instructions. She said, you know, she has all these beliefs about cancer, that it's a state of being almost, therefore chemo will only keep you alive rather than, you know, that it can't cure you. And so what are the 1, 5, 7, 10 year survival rates on chemo? She's like, ask them that, that'll catch them out. And so Paloma asked them this, and they sort of were like, I don't think they even understood the question. There was no time on it. It was like 6 rounds of chemo, 6 months, 80% chance of being cured. And if that doesn't work out, or if it's not progressing right, they would look into other options, of which there were many. And that's kind of what they told her. But again, like, Kate just tried to spin it.
Messages show how Paloma was contemplating whether to have chemotherapy or not. Remember, she'd also held some more alternative health beliefs before. For advice, Paloma reached out to a man called Patrick Vickers. Arnda says she had a good relationship with him while he was her mum's partner. He's also an alternative health practitioner. Paloma wrote to him, explaining what the doctors had said. She wrote, "So far, it just looks like the one tumour in my chest. They said with chemo, it's 80% chance of cure. It's a curative treatment. Should I go for that?" Patrick Vickers replied, and this is the voice of an actor.
"Chemo will reduce the tumour, but it will not permanently cure or unlikely to completely destroy tumour. The 80% is exaggerated. It is the human immune system that will permanently destroy the cancer. Chemo will only buy you time against the aggressiveness of the tumour, but will destroy your immune system in the process."
Several of his comments about chemotherapy are misleading, including his suggestion that what the doctors had said was exaggerated. He then goes on to recommend Gerson therapy, which is a strictly plant-based diet, as well as many juices a day, taken with supplements and coffee enemas. Some people claim, without a consensus of scientific evidence to support their views, that it can be used to treat a range of cancers.
"My advice? Try full strict Gerson for 6 weeks. See if your general symptoms improve. If so, you are on your way to healing, so continue on with Gerson. If symptoms remain same or worsen, then maybe consider chemo with Gerson."
When I contacted Patrick Vickers, he told me that any, quote, assertions that I played a role in her, Paloma's death, are legally inaccurate. He also shared documents with me in support of Gerson therapy. Arnda tells me that Paloma was worried about the negative side effects of chemotherapy, as it can cause fatigue, sickness, and hair loss.
Chemo can obviously affect fertility, and I know that was a big point of concern for Paloma, because she really wanted to have children. and was kind of painted this treatment as like, there's no downsides, you know.
The charity Cancer Research UK explained that Gerson therapy can have severe side effects, including dehydration, inflammation of the bowel and heart, and lung problems. At some point during her time in hospital, Paloma decided not to pursue chemotherapy, at least in the first instance, and instead wanted to try Gerson therapy.
She'd already had several sort of private conversations with Kate, and I could already feel her sort of shutting us out by this point.
On the 24th of December, Ander received a voice note from Kate, giving him instructions for when Paloma left hospital.
Please can you call ASAP and in private, away from Paloma's ears. I know what you think you've arranged for tomorrow, but when you get to the hospital, I would like you to, you can ask them for a wheelchair or anything. Take all.
In the voice note, Kate expressed her desire for Paloma to get better.
Imagine that she's hanging on a cliff with her fingernails and there's no safety net at the bottom, and if she falls, that's it. This is the Christmas where what she does now is we're going to try and get her to have lots of Christmases. And this is one Christmas that she's going to have to do as asked, really.
And she suggested that Paloma needed to stay at home rather than go to visit one of her friends. She made clear she had a plan for her daughter.
She needs to be here. There's a lot of other doctors now on board. I've got a doctor in London. There's stuff arrived for her already. She cannot go over there. If they want to see her, I know she thinks they're her family. If they love her, they can drive from there, see her for maybe half an hour or whatever here, or they can do it on FaceTime. You are welcome to be here with her, but she's really not going to be going in and out of anywhere.
Ander was uneasy about whether this plan was in Paloma's best interest, but he says he felt like he couldn't argue. Paloma was going home to try Gerson. Paloma's decision seems to have been informed, at least in part, by the kinds of medical misinformation she had been exposed to growing up. After all, her mum Kate is a conspiracy theory influencer with a significant reach. The online world is filled with wellness gurus. Many simply encourage a healthy lifestyle. But other social media influencers, including Kate Shemarani, go further, rejecting conventional medicine and posting cancer misinformation.
Because what is chemotherapy? It's mustard gas. When you see these ill-informed people sitting, having their mustard gas pumped into their veins, why are you listening to these fat nurses and unhealthy doctors who are just taking this poison to you?
People, if you think that the government love you and that they're your mummy and daddy, you're deluded. And I call the healthcare system, the National Homicide Service, for a reason.
For patients, medical misinformation can manifest itself in a range of ways. To understand more, I'm meeting Dr. Tom Roakes, Vice President of Clinical Oncology at the Royal College of Radiologists, the professional body for cancer doctors. We chat in his consultation room in Norwich.
Most people want to trust us, but they're also very, very frightened, and it's understandable that they might have looked at other options or, you know, gone on social media and found out what other people are talking about.
Dr. Roakes never met Paloma, but he tells me more about non-Hodgkin lymphoma, the cancer she was diagnosed with.
So lymphoma is a cancer of the blood system. Your lymph glands are the lymph glands or lymph nodes all around your body, so it's cancer arising in those lymph glands. So non-Hodgkin's lymphoma of a B-cell type is normally a high-grade lymphoma, something that's growing and changing quickly, but is very curable. The vast majority of people would be cured by courses of chemotherapy.
If you have high-grade lymphoma and you choose not to have chemotherapy, what would you expect to happen?
Lymphoma often is around your whole body at the start. So it often affects a lump of the cancer on a certain organ. If you've got lump of cancer in your neck, for example, you might begin to see it in your neck. It might affect your swallowing or your speaking. If it was in your abdomen, it might affect your gut and your digestion and things. And then as time goes by, you'd expect just to become generally more unwell. So losing weight, losing appetite, becoming more frail, less able to do things, until, I guess, with no treatment at all, you'd end up dying really just from the burden of cancer growing in your body.
Dr. Roeg says he gets why patients often want to explore all the options. That can include doing alternative therapies alongside conventional medical interventions.
We don't have all the answers, so we've got to be honest about that. Being clear when things that they want to do might be harmful or when they actually might genuinely be complementary. Complementary medicine is meant to be complementary rather than totally antagonistic. So I think honesty, giving people time to go and think about things, not pushing things too much.
Alternatives like juicing, for example, aren't necessarily harmful in and of themselves, nor is a more holistic approach to health. However, the danger can come when vulnerable patients are led to believe that these therapies alone can treat their cancer, and they choose to reject advised treatments like chemotherapy. Since the pandemic, Dr. Roeg says it can be more difficult to have open conversations with patients about different options.
I think the pandemic was such a unique and significant episode for the whole world that it has changed how we think about science and deal with science and deal with information, and it's magnified those polarizing views, and therefore I think it makes it easier for people to believe disinformation, in particularly in healthcare and science, and not least because the pandemic was a really traumatic thing for the world to go through, and science didn't have all the answers and didn't get it perfectly right. Of course it wouldn't, but I think in a way that perhaps breeds mistrust even more.
The mistrust Dr. Roeg is describing seems to have been exacerbated by social media. Some patients are being shown a range of unverified and misleading content on their feeds.
It used to almost be a slight trope that the patients who came in with a big file of newspapers, it would be quite a long conversation and you'd have to demystify what they came in with. Now that information has just been given to people all the time, and I guess the algorithms are pushing that even more, and I suspect that once you've looked up online something about non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, you may get some of the conspiracy theories pushed automatically to you as well. And some of the people who are at the vulnerable edge, you maybe not considered those alternatives, might be drawn into it much more easily.
The problem is that Dr. Roeg and other oncologists can't always see firsthand what content is being served up to different people. So I set up some dummy social media accounts to test what the algorithms are recommending to users. I typed in cancer treatments, and while there were some accurate posts, they were in a minority. I encountered different types of misinformation about cancer on TikTok, Instagram, and X. It ranged from conspiracy theories about doctors deliberately hiding cancer cures or harming patients, to viral clips from popular podcasts promoting unproven alternative methods. Like this one of actor Mel Gibson on the Joe Rogan podcast, talking about using drugs ivermectin and fenbendazole. Fenbendazole is a dewormer for animals.
They took some, what you've heard they've taken.
Ivermectin.
Fenbendazole.
Fenbendazole, yeah.
That's
right. Yeah, I'm hearing that a lot. Yeah.
This stuff works, man.
This exchange has been viewed more than 10 million times. Diet and what we eat came up a lot.
Do patients often talk to you about diet and what they should be eating or what they have eaten or not?
Yes, they do. There's a constant myth that sugar fuels cancer, and the theory that if you stop eating sugars, that will stop feeding the cancer. There is quite good evidence these days that a healthy, balanced diet and good exercise are the two things patients can do to help themselves. So we often talk about people just, you know, having that healthy, balanced diet. That can mean some alcohol and some meat, but it probably means not just going down a very narrow dietetic route. And that's something that people have control over and want to have control over for themselves. So we usually just try and explain that it's that healthy, balanced approach that does have some evidence behind it.
During the pandemic, after coming under public pressure, Several major social media platforms introduced guidelines to try to reduce the spread of medical misinformation. But more recently, some sites, like X and Meta, have relaxed their policies again because of concerns about freedom of expression. And as the dummy accounts show, some of these posts are not just allowed, they are actively pushed.
It just makes people more likely to hear that alternative treatments are mainstream. And it also gives less voice and less credence, therefore, to the mainstream stuff, which is not out there being pushed forward in the same way. So I think it just makes it easier for people who are susceptible and vulnerable to be influenced by the wrong information.
More views can equal more money for both the social media companies and the influencers themselves. They can monetize the attention they get and grow their profile to sell products. Let's take Kate Shemarani as an example. Since returning to the major social media sites after she was suspended for pushing disinformation, she's grown her reach again. Over the past 6 months, she's accumulated at least 4.8 million views from her own content across the major social media sites. She's been using these profiles to reach more people. She directs users to products she sells, like apricot kernels and other so-called natural therapies, but she doesn't explicitly tell her followers to reject medical advice or conventional treatment. She also makes money from her website membership, which costs around £70. And she charges cancer patients £195 for a consultation and 12-week personalised programme. There are dozens of anti-medicine conspiracy theory influencers sharing ideas and products in this way. For Dr. Roakes, this is a problem.
So I think there's a risk that people won't come forward with the symptoms of cancer. We know that the earlier that you catch cancer, the earlier you diagnose it, the better the chances are of being cured. And that's already quite difficult to get people to come forward with symptoms. So there's a risk that it marginalises those people completely from engaging in any medical care. And there's a risk that when they have been diagnosed, that they won't engage in the treatment that is right for them.
I contacted the different social media sites about the points raised in this episode. According to Meta, which owns Instagram and Facebook, the sites remove harmful health misinformation. TikTok says it has now banned Kate Shemarani's account for violating medical misinformation policies, and that it allows users to share personal health experiences as long as it does not contain harmful misinformation. X didn't respond.